So, we enter an interesting time in the holiday sequence. Wedged between two holy days today is Trumpets and Atonement. So we're between two holy days. It's an interesting time. Traditionally, the Jews during this time of year, when they keep Rosh Hashanah, they keep it for how many days? Does anybody know? Traditionally. For 2 days. Because of the calendar issues. It is their new year, though the year technically starts in the spring. They do it for 2 days. And the story in Genesis is read during these 2 days. It's known as the Akedah. And I've looked up the pronunciation of the Hebrew, and as with most things, one word, four pronunciations for the Jews. Akedah or Akedah, I'll call it the Akedah. It stands for the binding. Does anybody know what the binding of? Isaac. Yisak. It is the binding of Isaac. It is one of the most studied and controversial stories in the entire Bible, both by Jews and by non-Jews, by Christians. And there's a reason. So today we'll explore a fascinating story, one that figures in both testaments, where faith, obedience, grace are fused together. And for a title, it is the only begotten Son. So turn with me, if you would, to Genesis chapter 22. And in the reading that I do, and maybe some of the websites that you subscribe to, with the websites I find in my newsfeed on email, this issue came up 5 to 6 times, both before and after the Day of Trumpets. So turn with me in chapter 22. It is about Abraham. Let me give you a preface. Abraham and Sarah, as we well know, struggled with a promise from God that their offspring would be blessed as a nation of huge dimensions. The problem was, both were advanced in age. She was past the years of childbearing. And this promise to God and Sarah, Abraham and Sarah from God, came twice. At age 75, God called Abraham out of his homeland and promised him descendants and land. At this time, Sarah was at the ripe age of 65. So they decided there is no child so far. They decided among themselves, spurred by, was it Abraham or Sarah who made this suggestion about Hagar? Sarah. Sarah said, go to Hagar. That was a major mistake. Sarah's handmaid. And she would conceive through Abraham. So at age 99 and 90, God reaffirmed his covenant with Abraham and Sarah, stating that it would be Sarah, not Hagar, and would bear this promised child. And who arrived? Isaac, Yisak, which means what in Hebrew? Laughter. The story is just fascinating. Now, if you'll read the story, who laughed? Who else laughed? Abraham. But Sarah gets nailed. Indeed, he was born miraculously, and they were absolutely, as one would expect, elated. Very happy. So let's read it. Chapter 22, beginning in verse 1. Now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he said, here am I. We are going to see, as we read through this, some specific terms, phrases, and keywords. And I want you to think, as we read through these verses in Genesis 22, where have I heard this before? What does this make me think of? Again, note the key words and phrases. The phrase, here I am, is repeated 3 times in this section. It means hineni in Hebrew. Here I am. It's a word of presentation that I'm here before you. You have called and here I am. He said, here I am. Then he, God, said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. Shock upon triple shock that Abraham is hearing this. After years, decades, the man is 100 plus years old of waiting a son, this son of promise that was miraculously given to them from his wife, would be given up. Why? Why? We are not told. He said, I'm sure, going through Abraham's mind, and we need to be very, very careful about speculation. We're going to tread very, very carefully. What was going through his mind? You give me this son, and now you're taking him away? It, again, is speculation and very dangerous. So, again, we will tread and be very, very careful. But we will analyze and look at the words of Abraham and Isaac. These are difficult questions and not easily answered. So that's why for centuries, both Jews and Christians have discussed and debated these verses. The Jews in their Midrashim, which is their commentaries, wrestled with this, as I said, for many, many centuries. Robert Altman, in his commentary, The Five Books of Moses, he says the Hebrew here, your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac. The Hebrew, Altman says, the Hebrew, and I'm going to read this to you, just sit back and listen, it's a little long, I apologize. The Hebrew synaptic chain is exquisitely forged to carry a dramatic burden. The sundry attempts of English translators from the King James Version to the present to rearrange it are misguided. The classical Midrash, followed by Rashi, beautifully catches the resonance of the order of the terms. Rashi's, who's a medieval commentator, his concise version is as follows from the Hebrew. Your son, he said to him, Abraham said to God, I have two sons. God said to him, you're only one. You're only one. Abraham said, this one is an only son to this mother, and this one is an only son to his mother. God said to him, whom you love. He said to him, I love them both. God said to Abraham, Isaac. It's so interesting. And I will recommend to you, as I have in the past, Hillsdale College has a Genesis and Exodus. It's online. It is free by Dr. Justin Jackson. He does this. It does this exposition beautifully, very much in line with what we would agree with. It is a superb commentary and background information. The phrase in verse 2 about the burnt offering means one thing and one thing only, a sacrifice. Isaac was to be sacrificed. The Hebrew is olah, to offer it up. That's the word that came across from God to Abraham. The phrase, your only son, or your only one, is the Hebrew yachad, which means a singularity. It's soul, by implication, beloved, a life, singular, as not to be replaced, darling, solitary, only as special and unique, unique in every way. The phrase Mount Moriah is of uncertain meaning, but could mean possibly seen by Yah. God's vision is here. In thinking what Abraham was thinking, we need not speculate. We see later in the New Testament this very verse is analyzed for us. But the fascinating aspect in verse 2, take your son, your only son, whom you love, is all about a father's love for a son. What's also interesting is this word love, believe it or not, this is the first time in the Old Testament that the word love is ever mentioned. Here, in Genesis chapter 22, verse 2. Google it, don't believe me. A father's love for his son. It is here, it is referenced, the very first time. Verse 3. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey. He took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and he split the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Verse 4, then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young man, now note this, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship. And we will come back to you. We will come back to you? We will come back to you? How's that work? The verbiage and the sentence structure here is, again, very, very fascinating. Isaac, the two men with the wood. Verse 4, the third day. He lifted his eyes and he saw. Verse 5, we will come back to you. Isaac and Abraham, his father. Verse 6, so Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife. And the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. He said, Hineni, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, no kidding. But where is the lamb for a burnt offering? Verse 8, and Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Unbelievable, fascinating that Isaac would ask these questions. Isaac carries the wood. Just picture it. He carries the wood. then what is running through Isaac's mind? I see the fire, the wood, where's the lamb? What does he not mention? The knife, the cleaver, which is used for sacrifice. He doesn't mention it at all. Verse 8, God will provide. But this is an important phrase, but what does it mean? What does it mean that God will provide? Turn with me, if you would, to Hebrews chapter 11, the faith chapter. And we have, a fascinating commentary, verse 11, of Hebrews. Now listen to this carefully. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, of all the things to talk about with Abraham, in fact, did you know there's probably 8, 9, or 10 times that Abraham was tested, but this would be the epitome of all tests. He said, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises, Abraham, offered up his only begotten son, of whom it is said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. That was the prophecy. In Isaac, your seed, your progeny, your descendants, your inheritance will be called. Concluding that God was able to raise him, Isaac, to raise him up, even from the dead, from which he also received him in a figurative sense. Unbelievable. Even then, in this figurative sense, the resurrection is hinted at. Abraham was aware of the resurrection. He had to be. Hebrews says so. Abraham tells us, I go to worship and we will return, he tells his servants. We will return somehow, some way. And he's raised up, as we shall see, in a figurative sense, Isaac is. What of Ishmael through Hagar? Verse 17, it says, your only begotten son. It's the same word in John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. It is the same word. The son was special, unique, without peer, without equal. The Greek, in this case, is monogenes. It's from the mistotos, one and only, and genos, where we get the word gene. Offspring, gene, stock, properly defined as one of a kind, singular, only, literally one, monos, of a class. One of a class, unique. This is a key concept as to the uniqueness of these references. This is repeated over and over again, 3 times in Genesis 22. See if you can spot them. Your only son. What's interesting, the Greek Septuagint, which is the Greek version of the Old Testament, has your beloved, the son you love, in Genesis 22. Your beloved, Abraham, the son you, Abraham, love. Verse 9. Back to Genesis 22, sorry. In verse 9, our story continues. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham. And Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar. Just picture this. Can you imagine doing this? It's all in silence. He bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay the son. In verse 11, he says, the angel of the Eternal, verse 11, called him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham said, here am I. Hineni, that word again. Here am I. We're struck by the fact that in verse 12, the angel said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. This is where this angel of Lord of heaven, God was testing him. He says, now I know. The angel says this. I believe this is one of the 13 to 14 instances that's the embodiment of Jesus Christ before his physical embodiment, the angel of Yahweh. He speaks as God. He has agency for God. It says God was testing him. All we hear about is this angel of the eternal. I do believe it is God's supreme agent in both the testaments. Your only son, you have not withheld your only son from me. God says to him, now I know. Now I understand you, Abraham. It was a test. God knew through Abraham's incredible action of obedience. Abraham also knew. Can you imagine what was going through Isaac's mind while all this is going on? Isaac knew that God somehow, some way, however he would, that God would somehow work this out to God's purposes. Verse 13. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram, offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. What a statement. Offered up a burnt offering, a sacrifice, instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, the Lord will provide. As it is said, to this day, the mount of the eternal, it shall be provided. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son. That verse is repeated again, or that phrase is repeated again. Blessing, I will bless you, and multiplying, I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven, as the sand which is on the seashore. That's a lot. That's billions and billions and billions and trillions. Sand of the sea, stars of heaven, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because, why? What is the reason? He gives it to Abraham, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men, just as he said they would, both of them, Isaac and Abraham. He returned to his young men, and they rose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham dwelt in Beersheba. He lifts his eyes in verse 4, ram and thorns that they sacrificed. The Jewish tradition says the shofar that is blown on Rosh Hashanah is symbolized, this ram's horn, is the ram that Abraham found caught in a thicket. That's the symbolic precursor to the shofar, is this ram's horn. The angel of Yahweh calls from heaven again, your son, your only son. He repeats it over and over again. Why does the Bible repeat phrases this close together? For emphasis, that we will not mistake it, we will not miss it. The promise of generations is again repeated, because he said, you have obeyed my voice. Abraham is called the father of the faithful. He's also the same person, if you remember, not to cast aspersions. He's the same person who kind of fibbed about Sarah being his sister. He's the same person that did it not once, but twice. Once to the Pharaoh of Egypt and once to King Abimelech, just a few chapters back. But this here in chapter 22 is his greatest test of faith, the ultimate test for which he is known for. And God is pleased. The rest of what Abraham did is hard to remember. It's typically forgotten. This is not. Ask the writer of Hebrews. Of all the things that tested Abraham's faith, the book of Hebrews says this was his ultimate test. This was ground zero. And that's why he is called the father of the faithful. We have indeed been reading a story in Genesis, and all the while, what went through your mind? What was going on in your mind as you read some of these key phrases? Where have I read this before? Possibly be reminded of another event, or a special week, in fact, a period of time. Does anybody have any guesses? This is okay, this is audience participation. What does this remind you of? Come on. Jesus during what? Passover week. Indeed, it's true. This possibly reminded you of Genesis 22 and Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. It should be, because there are multiple parallels. I was reading this last year, and I said, why does this remind me? There's so many points. I'd like to go through some of them with you. And Genesis 22, I believe, is here for two reasons. One, to show us the test of Abraham, his obedience, his faith, his understanding, his trust in God, and Isaac's, to be honest. But it is also a parallel of the faith typology of Jesus Christ's atonement for mankind and his resurrection, a prototype. How do the two events compare? Well, in fingerprint matching, according to Perry Mason, you need at least 11 to 14 points of concurrence. In some cases, I can come up with almost 30 in just these verses. Work with me. I want you to think, a lot of you are smiling, I want you to think ahead of time. Let me go through them. Both of the events in Genesis 22 and Passover week in the New Testament, both events ultimately, they're between whom? Father and a son. Both instances are fully directed and controlled by God. Both sons are born how? Miraculously. Both sons were both prophesied. Number five, both sons were an only begotten, unique son in both cases, both in Genesis 22 and in the New Testament. Both sons were named by whom? Who named both sons? God named both sons. Both involve a mountain or mount. Both involve a certain number of days. How many? 3 days. A donkey is involved on the road to the sacrifice in Genesis 22 and in the New Testament as Jesus enters Jerusalem. Both events involve wood. Both sons carry the wood. Jesus carried his own cross to his own crucifixion. Both sons are bound to the wood. One by ropes in Genesis 22, maybe. We're not told how. Isaac is bound. In John chapter 20 in the New Testament, Christ is bound to the wooden cross by nails. Both, now this is a little bit of a stretch. You got to give me some slack here. Both involve thorns and a thicket. Ram in a thicket of thorns and Jesus, what? Crown of thorns, bingo. Both are presented as a sacrifice. Both involved a lamb or a ram. One literally, one figuratively. Both sons, I think this is an interesting aspect that maybe you agree with me, maybe not. Both sons, both persons that were going to be sacrificed, said very, very little. Isaiah 53 makes a very good point about the suffering servant. He said very little. He did not open his mouth. And Jesus didn't. Isaac says very little. Both fathers anticipated their son's resurrection or release. Somehow, some way, Abraham in the story of Genesis 22, and surely in Hebrews chapter 11, it tells us they expected God, the Father, to raise the Son. Both stories involve tremendous, epic, biblical faith. Both involve sons who were willing to go through with it. Neither objected, refused, tried to stop it. Both involve demonstrations of great obedience. Both center on God's grace and his desire to save. However, there is a difference. And the big difference is, of course, the endings in Genesis chapter 22 and the New Testament, the endings are completely different. So let's wrap it up. We're going to take a little bit of time. What does this tell us? I believe there are two major aspects. First is the theological. The theological is both the prototype of Abraham and Isaac and God and Jesus. The obvious overtones are Passover. But their ultimate objective is to lead to trumpets and atonement, the season that we're in now. That is why Jesus rose for the resurrection. This is why he is the atonement. He returns as a resurrected king, as we heard not too many days in both messages, in fact, here. And the resurrection for us and his people, God's people. Also, Christ as high priest due to his atoning sacrifice, which gives us access to the very presence of God, trumpets and atonement. We'll hear more about that, I'm sure, on the Day of Atonement. So returning resurrected king for resurrection and as high priest to enter the Holy of Holies. It tells us once again that Jesus Christ is intimately wrapped up in the holy days of God, Leviticus, that we keep. Intimately connected. He cannot be separated from them. He is in each and every one of them. The second aspect, I believe, is, of course, incredibly important, is application. Genesis 22 teaches us obedience to God and what God tells us to do, usually through his commandments. Obedience is hard, especially when we don't understand why, and many times we don't. We haven't got a clue. How many of you have children? Well, quite a few of you. How many of you were at one time in your past children? If any hands remain down, we'll counsel you after services. Now you laugh. You laugh. Because you remember you as a child. Not a pretty picture, was it? We didn't like to be told what to do. Have you ever given instructions to a four-year-old? I heard some laughter, so I see some smiles. I have. They neither understand why, nor do they want to. They couldn't care less. Because they don't understand. God said the same things to us, because we are children. And many times we don't understand what's going on. We can't explain why this person gets sick. We can't explain why this person succumbs. We don't understand many times the trials we're going through. We just don't understand. But God understands. God said the same to Abraham, both Abraham and Abraham to Isaac. God says to us, you got to trust me on this. I know what I'm doing. And that's sometimes what a parent has to say. Genesis 22 teaches us also that trust and faith are essentials. Turn, if you would, to James chapter 2. If you get there before me, just go ahead and start reading. James is a controversial book, very controversial. This is a controversial section of a controversial book. Martin Luther called the Epistle of James a epistle of... that's right. Why did he say that? Because it presents some problems in this issue of obedience and faith. But we're going to read it without the... This would take another message, but I would like just to read what is said here. What does it profit, my brethren, verse 14? What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or a sister is naked and destitute of the daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? What is the advantage? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, he says, is dead. Obedience is important. Obedience is very important. Verse 22, do you see that faith working together with works and by works, faith is made perfect? Verse 23, look at the example he gives. And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. And he was called the friend of God. You see then that a man is justified by works, not by faith only. He uses Abraham and his obedience. Faith and obedience go hand in hand. You prove or give evidence of what you believe by what you do. Sabbath attendance is an example. It is the outward expression of obedience. It's important. The word justified can also mean, in this case, made righteous. They go, again, hand in hand. And they are especially hard in hard times. It's very difficult to plow through and to do what we know we should be doing when we don't understand why. We're a little bit like Abraham, a little like Isaac. They, in many ways, they parallel you and me. But Genesis 22 also speaks to the grace and the love that God has for us. It also provides us that indeed, as Abraham said, God will provide. Somehow, some way, if not in this life, then in the next, God will provide an answer. He has provided, God has, his only begotten Son as a conduit and gives meaning to the Day of Trumpets and Resurrection and Atonement and Access. So as Abraham, we too have had, and will have our Mount Moriahs, things that we would not have expected, things we don't want to go through, things that we're not sure how we're going to get through, these Mount Moriahs. But we, like Abraham, look up to see the Lamb, God's only begotten Son.